them to change by attraction, because you don't have to push, prod, persuade, or punish people to create change in your organization. I'm your host, Esther Derby. I spoke to someone the other day who told me that she had failed to influence a key person in a change she wanted to accomplish. So I asked her some questions, which is what I usually do. And she talked about how she had tried to convince this person. She'd laid out all the logic. She'd laid out all the arguments to get him to do something that was actually extra work for him. And it wasn't certain that if he did this work, that it would actually convince his boss to do anything different. Sometimes it is possible to convince somebody to do something you want them to do, to sell them on it. But I think in general, we're more successful when we use influence. So what's the difference between trying to convince someone or persuade someone and trying to influence someone? Persuasion is about communication, direct communication, using logic and arguments and facts to try to change someone's beliefs or someone's behavior. Influence, on the other hand, can be indirect or intangible. It doesn't mean we stop talking to people or we stop talking about the logic. It means that we also rely on other means to shape behavior and to insert new thinking into organizations. So there's some obvious shortcomings with persuasion. For one thing, it can feel like you're selling people. And most people don't like to be sold to. They feel like they're being manipulated in some way, or that anytime they come up with an objection, someone is overcoming it until they're backed into a corner. And I don't think that's where we want people to be. But if you treat it like an argument, there's a different set of pitfalls. If you win the argument, it may be because you're better at arguing, not because you have the better idea, and the other person may on the surface agree or admit you won the argument, but they may not actually be convinced. On the other hand, if you lose the argument, it's going to be much harder to get someone else to consider the idea that you were trying to get across. And sometimes when people feel like someone's trying to argue them into something or talk them into something, they just hold on tighter to their existing ideas and beliefs. And there's tons of ways to influence people to get them to start thinking about an idea that bypass argument altogether. So I'm going to talk about 8 of them. The first one is to model. Back when I was a programmer, I wanted to get more systematic about understanding problems we were having in the batch job stream, because we were all rotating on call and I didn't really like being called in the middle of the night. So I got a big printout of the entire batch job stream and I put it up on the wall. And then when something blew up, I stuck a push pin in the wall and I had a little code so people knew what the different colors of pins meant. And people got curious. People started asking about it, and pretty soon people started putting their own push pins in, and pretty soon we had some data, right? So I didn't try to convince anyone to do anything. I just did it. Modeling is also a good way to show people about possibilities they haven't considered before. So at one point I had a client where I was doing a fair number of workshops, and the whole organization had this pattern of people showing up midway. So they'd show up midway into a meeting and kind of expect the meeting to reset so that they could be brought up to speed, or they'd come on time, but they'd leave to go take phone calls. And that meant that when they came back, people had to backtrack. So this was pervasive. It was not just meetings, it was workshops. And in one of my workshops, which was a 3-day workshop, someone showed up halfway through the second day and asked if she could join the workshop. And I said no. I explained that, you know, the work we had done on the first day was foundational to the rest of the workshop, and it would just not be possible for her to participate fully, and that trying to backtrack would not be fair to all of the other participants. Of course, she got really angry, and she said she had cleared her schedule to be in this workshop, which obviously wasn't true since she hadn't managed to show up for the first day and a half. But since it was a pattern in this organization, she just assumed that she would be able to join. And so she threatened me, and I continued to say, no, I'd love to have you in the next workshop, and here's why it doesn't make sense for you to join now. Meanwhile, all the participants in the workshop were just watching me when their eyes were getting bigger. because they had never seen someone draw a boundary like this. Now, I can't claim that I really changed the whole meeting culture in that organization, but for the people who were in that room, they had a model of how to draw that boundary, how to say, no, it's not acceptable for you to come in halfway and derail the whole situation. So the second way to influence is to avoid the frontal assault of trying to talk someone into a new idea and insert your idea obliquely. You can do this lots of ways. You can do this by sharing an article, maybe with a little context. You know, I found this interesting. I wonder how it might help us with whatever issue it is we're dealing with. I used to leave books on my desk when we were in real space and people would, you know, pick them up and get curious and then I'd lend it out. It's a little harder today, but you can always leave books visible so that people might get curious about it. And if they want to loan it, you can see if you can do a Kindle loan. The third way also has to do with books, in that you can have a book study. And that's a really great way for people to, as a group, begin to explore a new idea. So in my social book club, they mostly read novels. And I told them a while ago that at the present state of the world, I was not prioritizing novels. I've been reading a lot of nonfiction. Every once in a while, they indulge me by picking something, a book from what they call my dismal reading list. I was able to introduce the idea of moral foundations theory. We read Jonathan Haidt's The Righteous Mind. We had some really great discussions and people were introduced to an idea without persuasion. People really turned it over in their minds and I think it really changed how people were looking at certain situations. The fourth way is to ask questions. This is really an underappreciated way to insert different ideas. So one client, when a team didn't deliver as expected, the senior managers, actually this is pervasive in the organization, all of the managers would ask rhetorically, why aren't these teams accountable? That didn't help at all with problem solving because they were limiting their dimension to these teams are bad and not motivated rather than looking at anything in the environment. So I started inserting a different sort of question that asked things like, well, who was actually present in that commitment meeting? What is their known velocity? How many points have they been able to deliver over time? So are they delivering close to that? You know, so I just asked a bunch of different questions and it started people thinking differently. I didn't try to argue with them that it was not helpful to just blame teams or I didn't accuse them of blaming the teams. I just started asking different questions. Over time, that shifted more towards considering the environment and what impediments might exist for the teams rather than just blaming them. But you can ask all sorts of questions. I worked with a group that was really focused on targets rather than outcomes, so I just started asking them, well, if you meet that target, what will you gain? What would the benefit be to the organization, and how might you see that? And it shifted people's thinking. So I didn't try to convince them that targets were bad and outcomes are good. I just asked different questions. A fifth way to influence is to use analogies. You can talk to people all day long about work in process and cues and try to convince them that it makes sense. But I often find analogies work better for a lot of different concepts. Rather than go into the theory and risk sort of upstatusing myself by taking on a teacher role, I often just tell a story. With the situation about work in process, I talked about how at one point I had 7 different knitting projects on the needles. And of course, someone would ask, well, did you ever get them done? And I'd say, no. I didn't make progress on any of them, and eventually I lost interest, or I would pick them back up and forget what the pattern was, and it was really slow and annoying. So I just, you know, I just put them all away. Then we could start talking about why it was so nonsensical for me to have 7 knitting projects on the needles at one time, and start then talking about how we know this kind of stuff at home, but maybe we forget it at work, and what are the pressures we're under at work that lead us to take on so many projects at a time. A sixth way to influence is to take advantage of networks, because networks are super powerful in shaping what we think about, what we think is acceptable, what our behavior is. I mean, there's tons of research about this. They affect how much we eat. They affect what behaviors we think are appropriate in all realms of life. You know, what it's appropriate to wear, how it's appropriate to treat people, everything. So when we can take networks into account and we can figure out where a network is where people are respected and we can insert an idea into that network, then it often diffuses very quickly. Sometimes I come across different pockets in the organization where people are doing something good that we can build on, and then I introduce those people. So I create a bridge between those two networks, and that often increases the flow across a broader swath of the organization. Number 7 is to track and fan. That's a term I learned from Gervase Bouche, and he describes this as when you notice something that is working, so this is similar to the network idea, when you notice something is working in some place in the organization, you kind of keep track of that and you treat it like a little spark and you fan it into a flame. So you might give it more attention, you might spend more time talking to people about it, you might tell stories about what's going on in that part of the organization, but just look for the things that are working. Notice it, give it attention, show interest, which gives people the energy to continue. Final way, influence strategy number 8, I've talked about before in an earlier podcast about attraction strategies, is that succeeding at something is a really great way to influence. So if you model something and you get a couple of people interested in working on it with you and you can actually create a success and you can show some outcomes, that's a powerful influencer because people are going to get curious about it and they may want what you've got. So don't limit yourself to telling and selling your ideas. There are real limits to persuasion. Show people, insert some new ideas, track and fan some sparks of goodness. Persuading people to do something, particularly if it involves extra work or risk, is hard. But influencing can be surprisingly easy. It does take patience. It does take attention. It doesn't always work as fast as you would hope, but then neither does persuasion. The signs can be more subtle. There may be delays. But the advantage is that you're much more likely to successfully insert new ideas and new thinking and new ways of acting into the organization. So remember the person I told you about at the beginning of the episode who felt like she had failed to influence this person? I think she failed to persuade him, but I think she may have actually influenced him. He didn't disagree with her ideas. He thought they were good ideas. He just didn't want to do them because he didn't have time and they were risky. But my guess is that if she follows up with some additional influencing strategies, maybe modeling what she wants to have happen so that he doesn't have to kind of think it all up on his own, he can look at it and that will reinforce his agreement. Or she can show some success with it and that will make it more attractive to him. So think about somebody you've been trying to persuade and see if you can influence them instead. If these ideas resonated with you, I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at esther@estherderby.com and share the podcast with your pals. Thanks for listening. You'll find references and links mentioned in the episode at changebyattraction.simplecast.com. Check out my website and blog at www.estherderby.com. You'll find lots of articles about change, and you can sign up for my newsletter there. If you enjoyed the podcast, please let your friends know and rate it on Simplecast or wherever you get your podcasts.